Welcome to Message Delivery by Lisa Ann. You can't make this stuff up. Do you know what your superpowers are? Are you divinely guided to help yourself and others on your path? Tune in now as Lisa helps you learn to work with your own guardians, guides, and spirit team, bringing a little bit of humor to your journey and giving you a sense of peace, guidance, and inspiration from the other side. Your delivery is in. Here's your host, Lisa Ann.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Message Delivery. You can't make this stuff up. We have got another really packed hour, so we're going to get right to it. But first of all, I do want to say thank you for everybody that came out and saw me at the Mind, Body, Spirit Festival. I was just slammed with readings, and I am just truly grateful, and I just wanted to say that. But if you are still interested in getting a reading, you can reach me at angelmessagestoyou.com, and that, again, is angelmessages2u.com. So anyway, we always do the card of the day, and we went ahead and pulled one, and what we have is the dog. The dog represents loyalty. So there may be somebody that you're questioning if you can trust them. It could be a counselor, a best friend. Sounds like you've got some important information you might want to give them or talk to them about, but there is loyalty there. So I just wanted to say it's a go. So anyway, what I want to do now is we have got Benjamin Whitehurst, and he is here to discuss dreams. So welcome, Benjamin. How are you today?
I'm well. It's exciting to be here.
Oh, we are so excited. I can't tell you how many people have been like, oh my gosh, we're talking about dreams. Everybody has dreams. So for people that don't know you though, can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
So I live in Durham, first of all, North Carolina, and I have a master's degree in transpersonal counseling psychology. And I started the Alchemical Dreamers Guild about 5 or 6 years ago here in Durham when I moved here after a long series of kind of precognitive and guiding dreams that moved me here from Boulder. And it's been quite the journey creating it. And I do lots of private dream work and sleep coaching and a lot of things related to sleep and dreams. And I love reading all the books on it. It's one of those things I never get tired of.
No, I don't think I am a storybook. I wake up a lot of times actually more tired so than when I went to bed because I'm so busy in my dreams. But a lot of people are. So we've got so many questions for you. So just bear with me. We're going to kind of go along. Before I do, you actually have an upcoming dream retreat. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, we have our fall retreat in the Blue Ridge Mountains. And it is September 18th through the 21st. I'm co-facilitating with a local Qigong facilitator who's also been training in dream work, Link Freeman. And it is outdoors camping, grounding. So for anyone who's scared of camping, we also have our spring retreat, which is going to be at the beach. And that's a high-end retreat. It's not camping. But yeah, this has the intention of being a healing dreams retreat. And so just like in the old Asclepian temples of Greece, we want to be connected to the ground.
That's awesome. Both of them, I'm in. I mean, those both sound like a lot of fun. So why don't we get started? And for those of you just knowing that he actually is giving away a 30-minute dream interpretation, and we will give you the phone number close to around the 45-minute mark. And if you're the first caller in, then you get a 30-minute dream interpretation with Benjamin. So, but let's go ahead and get started. So I've got a bazillion questions, and I'm going to try to fire them off. And if you could just give us your gift of knowledge, this would be amazing. So what are the different kinds of dreams?
Okay. So, and this being a message delivery program, I'll focus on kind of the useful types especially.
Yes.
So let's start with what's not useful, which is sometimes people will dismiss all dreams as just being day residue. Like if you look at some of the scientific literature, they're like, oh, that's just the brain digesting the previous day. So there are some dreams like that. So let's just name that and set those aside for now. But there's a lot of other dreams that are really useful. There are visitation dreams where we can have our loved ones visiting us and either giving us messages or consoling us after a loss. There are precognitive dreams that are dreams that will arrive that accurately predict future events. There are other dreams that come more in the service of showing us our blind spots, kind of the psychological dreams. There's other dreams where spiritual teachers can visit you and give you instructions. One of my teachers would tell me stories of her Kundalini teacher who would arrive during the night to give Kundalini yoga instructions. So there's lots of different types of dreams.
No kidding. Oh my gosh. So there's some different types of dream messages. So is that what you were talking about, like the physical, psychological, or spiritual, or are there different categories even?
And it can be divided however we want, of course. But the three main layers of dreams that are useful are the psychological dreams, the physical or healing dreams, and the spiritual dreams. So we'll probably go into those three pieces quite a bit today.
Yeah, definitely.
I do want to name that they can be useful on different levels. It's not just healing or not just this or that.
Okay, so basically, thank you for letting me know that I am not losing my mind, because I wake up and I'm a storybook and I'm like, you can't make this stuff up. Where would I even come up with that? So, but when dreams are literal, talk about that. I mean, sometimes you said dreams are literal and sometimes they're symbolic. How do we tell the difference between them?
Okay, that's a great question. So sometimes, let's say, for example, that one's grandmother came in the middle of the night and provided kind of instructions on where money was buried in the backyard after she died. Like, things like that have actually happened to people where they're like, what's the code to this family safe and things like that. So that would be a dream that we would probably want to interpret literally if we had a grandmother that just died recently. But I do want to add a piece from the very beginning, is that even when it's a fully literal dream, like a precognitive dream, occasionally people will dream, for example, about the grocery store they will be attending or visiting 2 days later, and they'll walk in and be exactly like they had dreamed. But even dreams like that do have a literal quality, we can still look at them symbolically. A great example of this are baby name dreams or pregnancy dreams, another category, where women are known, a lot of women, not just a few, will dream either of their baby's name, or they'll have a kind of a meeting with the spirit that is to be their baby right at the start of the pregnancy. And these dreams are uplifting environment, and the woman just wakes up saying, I'm pregnant, and this is the baby, and this is what it looks like. These are its kind of soul qualities. And then they'll tell their husband and go get the test, and it's literal. But even when it's that literal, and uplifting and joyful, we can still bring in that symbolic layer. Because, for example, the baby is a symbol of newness coming into our lives. It is a literal baby, and it is a 180-degree turn in our lives that is bringing in something new and radiant. So that's an example where the literalism and the symbolism really align and point to the same thing.
Huh. That's actually cool. I actually dreamed 2 days. I'm going to be a grandmother, and my youngest and his wife are pregnant, but I actually had a literal dream 2 days before, and I didn't want to be that mom that was like, you know, are you pregnant yet? So I didn't say anything. They called me 2 days later, and I had wrote it down, and they said, we're pregnant. And I said, well, I actually know the sex. Do you want to know? And they're going, no. So I feel like I had a literal dream, but I didn't know it was literal or symbolic until they actually approached me. So I think that was just so cool that it was just right in line. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. We can go into the characteristics of precognitive dreams if you'd like how can we know in advance kind of if it is going to point to something, but yeah, those dreams, they could be so radiant and people just wake up knowing things sometimes.
I just think that is just so cool, because if you know, then I can say quite often, I know I dream heavily. So there have been so many things that have happened as a precognitive, but I've also started to really pay attention to symbolic or literal meaning. So how do we know that we're on the right track in interpreting a dream?
Okay. And this is where a lot of people get stuck. Let's start with what the wrong track usually looks like. The wrong track usually means getting stuck in our heads. We go to the internet, we type in dream symbolism tree, and we go to a page that has like 50 different options of what a dream can mean.
Right.
That's usually what doesn't get to the core of it. And what one reason it doesn't work is that our dreams are often pointing to things that we don't yet know, things that are our blind spots. So one of my teachers, Jeremy Taylor, would say, the dreams don't just come to tell us what we already know. One of my friends, one of those kind of know-it-all types, he will have the dreams and he'll parse it out word for word. Okay, this means that, and he feels very satisfied with it. And he doesn't seem to get much out of it, frankly. Like, I don't see him changing and growing, because there is that assumption, right? Like, okay, I know this. So how do we get past that? And one thing I love is slowing down. Like, when I'm working with clients, I really will have us take a breath. And there may be an image or something that's being dismissed even, like, oh, this is just a fragment. And I'll say, hold on, before we dismiss it, okay, tell me the dream a couple times, and where do you feel this in your body right now? And there'll be this long pause, an uncomfortable pause, and then be like, oh, my throat is contracting. I notice I feel it right here, or the stomach, or there'll be a line of energy. Huh. Or a recent one I had with someone where they're like, oh, this nightmare, this motion that I was interpreting, it actually feels like energy healing happening. And I thought this was a nightmare character harming me, but it feels like energy healing. And we get this felt sense when we slow it down. We come to the body first, and we can come to the emotions. And there's a third piece, which is the intuition, right? We slow down, and instead of dismissing what's arising, we tune into this little micro arisings, and then we name them in connection with another human being. Because there's resonance, right?
Right.
And then together, we can do this thing where, oh, being with you right now, hearing you say that, I notice I also feel my stomach. And I'm getting this image of a blank. And so that friendship piece gets past the blind spot. So we get past the blind spot with our felt sense, but also with a partner who's feeling differently, because we're wired so differently. Each human has unique blind spots. So get two or three in a room. We share the dreams in groups a lot of the time. And then all of a sudden you get 20 different versions of the same dream in a group of 20 people. And one of them's likely to get past my blind spot.
I had no idea. I've already learned something. So thank you for that. I just wake up and I'm got to call somebody and go, you're not going to believe this dream. Mm-hmm. And I never thought to actually think about how it's affecting me. So thank you for that. So is that basically the embodied dream practice that you had just discussed, or is that something different?
That's a version of it. Yeah. And let me add another layer that may be useful to some of the people listening. Sometimes people will wake up and be like, this dream isn't for me. Like, some people are really empathic, mm-hmm. and they may be picking up things on the culture around us. For example, I had a whole series of hurricane dreams and electoral map dreams, where I was like, I woke up and I was like, this is not a personal dream. This is like another layer, right? The collective.
Right.
And I would wake up and I would just have either this knot in my stomach if it's a collective dream, or I would like have this fixation and I would run to the weather channel, right? Like, and I could just feel that collective fear. And this was before a major hurricane hit, that particular one I'm referring to, like 2 weeks before. It was actually the day before the hurricane formed, way out in the Atlantic. I was having this precognitive dream and I felt into it, right? Like, this is a real feeling and it's not me. This is not symbolic. And I could say more about that if you want in a second, but just to finish the thought, there's all these different ways of bringing it in the body into feeling into the collective also. Sometimes we think of our bodies as personal. So where I'm going with this is we're all interconnected. And those of us who are sensitive, we're actually not processing just us, but we're processing from around us. So the moment we name what's happening, I'm having this big dream that's larger than me, that actually releases it in our body. So we're not carrying the whole collective weight for the entire day as well.
That makes a lot of sense. Like, I know that, you know, again, everybody has different ways of interpreting it, but sometimes it's not about them, but they're carrying that energy in and it tends to be disruptive for the rest of their day. But they know if they can release it or just speak it out or write it out. Mm-hmm. I think sometimes that helps. So, but how important is restful sleep and journaling in this process?
Okay. Yeah, let's start with the journaling piece, because a lot of people do journal.
Yes.
And there's people like you, for example, where journaling might come at the expense of restful sleep. Like, some people just have so many dreams. For people like you, I would actually say keep a little red light pen around and make a sketch in the middle of the night, like time it for 1 minute and just like get the core image of the dream, or write one paragraph
Okay.
Instead of writing the long narratives, unless you're really wanting to dedicate an hour a day to it. So there's a bunch of pieces to this that I think will be really useful to listeners. One is the importance of dream journaling. Like, I write my dreams down probably 5 days a week. I do give myself a break sometimes. Like, if I wake up ornery, I will kind of let it slip every once in a while. I think that's okay.
Right.
But the more I do it, the more I get and the more insights I get. And then the benefit of dream journaling for message, receiving messages, is I can look back. So each year, at the end of the year, I do an inventory at New Year's. And that's when I tend to find the patterns I missed. I had a whole series of dreams about bees, none of which were stinging me, but they land on my neck in the dreams. So I did the inventory. I was like, why do I have 9 dreams of bees landing on my neck? Like the two symbols going together. And I would say chiropractor was the result of that. But yeah, like sometimes the messages require a dream journal to catch them. A number of my most important messages have come not from a single dream, but from tracking them over time.
Again, something I never thought of. So what I do is the journaling is I will actually wake up in the middle of the night and I know that if I even take 4 steps to the bathroom or in the kitchen, I will lose it for the most part. So I will literally talk it into my phone and send myself an email. So I'll wake up, I will have emails for myself in the middle of the night with dreams and I have no idea what I said because another dream is more apparent when I wake up. So I've not looked back though to see if there's a pattern to these. And again, fascinating because I have been cataloging. I print them off on the computer and I put them in a book. So I'm like, okay, we have to do something with these. So again, that is so helpful because there is messages in there and there's patterns that I can obviously have overlooked. I didn't even think about that. So let me ask you a question. Is every dream worth interpreting?
Oh, that's a hard question. I mean, my teachers would always say, don't dismiss any dream. The one you want to dismiss is probably the one that is important to work. So that's on the one hand. And then on the other hand, the extreme is like Carl Jung, for example, who holed up for, was it 2 or 3 years on the lake and just spent all day every day kind of working with dreams and inner images and almost went insane spending all of his time doing it. There's kind of an infinite amount of dream work we can do. So there's no recommendation exactly between how much to do. I try to set the intent to at least write my dreams down, and then a couple times a month I'll work them with a group or with others. I find the more I do, the more I benefit. So for someone who has lots and lots of dreams, I would not encourage them necessarily to look at each one, but I might encourage them to work the ones that have the most energy or the ones they most want to dismiss. That's probably how I would say it.
Okay. So then what specific elements of a dream would you pay attention to then? So, you know, I woke up and I'm having a dream about cutting the grass. Well, is that really significant or is there an element of this? Or if I was scared or if I was laughing, if you wake up and you get the bits and pieces of a dream, at what point would you go, oh, flag, I need to like pay attention to that part of it? How would you know? What are the elements that you should always pay attention to?
I'll make a list of kind of my highest priorities. Like if I'm having an ordinary day, like, and I don't want to record something, which ones would I actually like get over it to record just because they feel important, right? One would be nightmares. I always try to record my nightmares because there's an urgency, right? And nightmares often repeat. So writing them once and paying attention to it once can prevent a whole series of them.
Okay.
So that's one thing I would say. A second thing I always try to write down, if I wake up and there's any mystical quality to the dream, Carl Jung would call it the numinous quality. Like just, I'm remembering a dream right now, my whole body's still tingling. Like some of these dreams are powerful and they're related to spiritual opening. I see some of these dreams as markers, kind of bookmarks for our spiritual opening. We can have mystical experiences while asleep. And when we remember them while awake, it actually touches us back into that same state of awareness on the one hand. So I write down any dream where I'm doing energy healing, receiving energy healing, or where there's that kind of tingle all over thing.
Yes.
That's one thing. And those dreams are also important because they can, that's one of the most useful markers of precognitive dreams. So I have found fairly consistently that maybe half of my precognitive dreams have that feeling when I wake up.
Okay.
And the elements that are happening when I'm when the mystical experience is happening are the ones most likely to be precognitive.
Okay.
And there's often more than one precognitive element in dreams like that. They tend to come in whole batches.
Yeah. I actually just probably about 2 weeks ago, I had a dream where I was in an empty house or a room. I was being spun around and all of a sudden it was like fast, and then stopped right in front of an empty closet. And I said, there's nobody in here. And all of a sudden spin, stop. And I was looking at one of those retractable antennas and I'm like, mm-hmm. What is this for? And all of a sudden spin. And I kept feeling energy and I ended up in front of a window. And all of a sudden there was like one of those holographic heads from the Wizard of Oz. And I just remember going, what do you want? And then I woke up and I was racked with goosebumps. I felt like there was presence in my room. I was like, wow, what is this? So I think that kind of describes what you were talking about. So there's something more to that. Obviously, I'm going to have to kind of analyze it based on all the instruction that you're giving.
Right. Like if you were to actually take that dream piece and slow down, like give it maybe 15 seconds.
Uh-huh.
And notice where you're feeling the opening in your body. If any.
I'm actually feeling it in my heart.
Uh-huh. Right. And so this dream may point to the opening in the heart, either an invitation to open it or an opening that's already available. And then we would tune in kind of the context, Wizard of Oz, like the wizard, kind of the contact perhaps with a higher part of me that's running the show, right? Kind of the wizard.
This is true. I didn't think about that. Mm-hmm. He was green, though. I remember that.
So. Yeah. And which is, again, the heart chakra.
Right. Oh, I didn't even think about that either. So let me ask you another question.
The point, all the roads tend to lead to Rome, right?
Right. I see. And this is like so fascinating. Okay. So do you encourage them to look at things online to decipher their dreams? Because you're right. You talk about dreams and I've got like my rattling list of, you know, do you dream in color? Do you dream? Are you an observer? I mean, I've got like all these questions, but every dream book, Google, everybody's got a different opinion. And I think it's really colored by your experience. So is there a go-to place that you could, I mean, a lot of times if you're confused, you end up calling up four of your friends going, what the hell does this mean? And they know your life where it might represent something, but is there a more accurate go-to place to decipher some of these?
There's a couple of things I would say. Working with a dream with another person will always be deeper than doing it on your own. There are online forums. There's online kind of dream journal communities you can Google and find. Reddit being one of them, for example. You get a bunch of teenagers reflecting on your dreams when you post to most of these forums. I highly encourage people to join their local dream groups. And then it's usually inexpensive. There's also DreamWork trainings, of course. But what I would do if I had no phone, no way to get help, I would try sketching it. I would do whatever I am least likely to do that's kind of using my logical brain. For example, if you're right-handed, they say, try drawing it or writing it with your left hand because it brings the intuitive capacity on. It gets you out of the habitual mind that's blocking you from seeing something. So I always encourage people who aren't artists to sketch it. For people who are artists to write it with their left hand if they're right-handed. I sometimes will go to the online dream dictionaries to look up kind of animal symbolism.
Okay.
Or Wikipedia, like I'll read about the species. I've had a lot of dreams that are naming very specific, like scientific names of insects or plants and things. I'm like, why this one? So I'll go read the biology of it. And then but with that information, I don't stay in my head. I then slow down enough to feel it. Okay, after knowing all this, after reading AuntieFlo.com or whatever's dream dictionary, where out of the 50 things I just read, is one of them actually touching my body somewhere?
Am I just actually think that's
feeling
fascinating.
Contraction?
I feel like I'm learning dreams all over again for the first time, just that one key element about where are you feeling it. But again, you're not looking at everything so literal, but mm-hmm. feeling into the information that you just read. So, and what was that website that you said, Antiflow?
That's one of the online dream dictionaries. Yeah.
Oh, I did not know that either.
There's about 50 of them. What I usually will do if I'm really stuck, I'll type in dream symbolism dog in the search engine, and you'll get a list of like 20 dream dictionaries you can choose from.
No kidding. Mm-hmm. I am so glad this is being recorded, because I'm going to have to go back and take notes on you. So thank you for all of this information. So we have got a lot more questions. I have got my list in front of me, but right now we are going to take a real quick break. And at this point, you are listening to Message Delivery. You can't make this stuff up. And we're
welcome to the Dr. Pat Show, talk radio to thrive by. I am so thrilled to be talking to all of you. We have got talk radio for all of us. Are you ready and willing and able to accept all of the abundance you can muster up in your life? Yeah. Check us out at drpatshow.com, transformationtalkradio.com, transformationradio.fm. Oh my goodness.
Message Delivery by Lisa Ann. You can't make this stuff up. Tune in every first and third Thursday at 1 p.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Message Delivery is an inspirational show about the journey to enlightenment and spirituality. For more information or your own personal message delivery, visit AngelMessagesToYou.com. That's Angel Messages, the number two, the letter U.com.
Listen up. The wealth you receive is a result of your personal relationship with the soul of money, meaning your spiritual well-being affects your ability to create abundance. Jennifer Bloom works with people to mend the spiritual disconnects that block up the cash flow. How's your relationship with yourself? Are you in balance with the divine? I know, these are big questions, but there are answers. Take Jennifer's free money relationship quiz to learn where you need to focus your energy and watch yourself grow into the abundance you deserve. Trust the divine. Learn to receive. You are worthy of all the wealth you seek. Visit jenniferbloom.com and click on the purple banner to take the free money relationship quiz. That's Jennifer Bloom, BLOOME.com.
Hey, everybody, welcome back. You are listening to Message Delivery. You can't make this stuff up. I am your host, Lisa Ann. And if you are interested in having a reading with me, you can always reach me at my website, which is angelmessagestoyou.com. That is Angel Messages, the number two, the letter U.com. So we are talking all about dreams, and I have my guest, Benjamin Whitehurst, with me. And he's got a couple of dream retreats coming up. So for those of you that maybe didn't catch it at the beginning, Benjamin, can you tell us about the dream retreats coming up again?
Sure. The one we have this September is called the Asclepian Healing Dreams Retreat. So it's focused on healing dreams, and we will actually be outside camping in the beautiful Blue Ridge Mountains. And that one is September 18th through the 21st. And that's the fall one. And the spring one is interesting. For anyone interested in learning about dreams, we have the Alchemical Dreamwork Initiation, which is a full training in dreamwork, a level one training. We have three total levels in the Alchemical Dreamworks Guild. And as part of that, and also open to the public, we have a spring retreat. It's going to be at the beach next year. I believe it's April 23rd is that weekend. We have a full beach house, and it's just a beautiful time among other dreamers and people who you actually want to be around, you'll learn with, and it's experiential. Everyone will get 1 or 2 hours at both retreats kind of focused on you and your dreams and your process.
Absolutely. So do you have a website that if people wanted to get in touch with you and maybe look at a little bit more about the details of these retreats?
Yeah, my website is dreamcircling.com, dreamcircling.com, or you can look us up on the Alchemical Dreamers Guild meetup.
Perfect. Okay, well, all right, so we're going back. Let's talk about, before we jump into some of these other questions, I have friends and they say, I don't dream. I don't get good sleep. Can you tell us a little bit about that? What could maybe somebody do in order to get better sleep? Tell us about what the relevance of getting good sleep is to dreaming.
Okay. So if you're not getting good sleep, you're probably not dreaming. Like a lot of people who snore or otherwise have trouble breathing, you're maybe waking up 100 times in the night with sleep apnea and not even know it. So first of all, you may want to go to the doctor if you're not dreaming and just kind of keep yourself in good health. But the thing with sleep is there's a way in which when we're not sleeping well, we wake up grumpy or otherwise like rolling over half dead where we're not remembering our dreams. So I highly encourage anybody with insomnia or otherwise struggling. There's books like The Circadian Code by Satchit Panda that are really good. I can also help you with sleep coaching, of course, if you're really stuck with insomnia or something. But we have to have that energy, that like excitement when we wake up to remember our dreams. The first thought has to be, what did I dream? Before we move, before we blink, sometimes even before we open our eyes, if you aren't remembering your dreams, that is how you do it. You'll remember like an image or a fleeting thought here and there at first, but if every day you start with, what did I dream? Before you even open your eyes, you will start remembering pieces of it, and then you got to write it down first thing. Some people have to keep a pen and paper by their bed. I keep a red light pen, and I've also used a voice recorder. Both of those work really well. But yeah, sleep is super important if you want to have good dreams.
Definitely. Okay, so let's jump back into some of the questions. How do you know if a dream is a premonition?
Okay, that's a really important question, because sometimes people will have these god-awful dreams of like car accidents or like their mother dying. And it never hurts upon having those dreams to call the person that you dreamed about. So just naming it is okay to act as if it is real if you're concerned about it. And there's a few ways that are shown in the research to predict precognitive dreams. One is that numinous sense that I was mentioning earlier. If it feels kind of not fully nightmarish, but just kind of larger than life, you get the tingles all over. There's like a sense of a visitation or a spirit guide visiting, and it just has this expanded sense. That is one of the signs of a precognitive dream. Another one of them is, how to express it? There's like a knowing quality. Like it's a little bit hard to put your finger on all of this. But for example, I had a set of precognitive dreams about my brakes going out on my car. So first of all, I had several dreams about the brakes. People with healing dreams will often have several dreams about cancer, for example, beforehand. And these are dreams that are pointing to something. So if you have this very bizarre thing kind of suddenly appearing in your dreams that does not, it's not really traceable to anything in your life that you can pinpoint. That is often a sign, and it can come symbolically or it can come literally. For example, when I was buying my house, I had precognitive dreams 6 months before the house even went on the market, twice, of it was two high-heeled shoes side by side, each one $13. So a total of $26 for the pair. Both dreams took place in a mall. And 3 months later, like after the first dream and after the second, I was just going through my journal and I was like, that's bizarre. What is that? And I was like, oh, I'm doing a housing search and I've been incubating dreams, asking questions about how to find my house. And sure enough, I got two houses under contract with very similar house numbers that had those 13s and 26s in them.
No kidding.
So the bizarre element played out. And I predicted accurately from this another thing that actually was precognitive. One of those high-heeled shoes was shaped like a jack in the pulpit. And I was like, I bet I'm going to see a jack in the pulpit the day I get the house under contract or the day I buy it or something. Sure enough, I was out hiking in the woods in Asheville and I got the phone call. Hey, you're under contract. I was like, yes. And sure enough, like The only time that year I saw Jack in the Pulpit Flower was about 10 minutes later.
No kidding.
Yep, exactly.
Oh my gosh. Okay. So we're having all these dreams. We're waking up, and I know I went to a dream seminar at the Rhine, and the guy was brilliant, and he was talking about, I don't remember his name, but he was brilliant. And I said, how long have you been recording your dreams? He goes, since 1978. Mm-hmm. And I said, have you ever gone back and read it? He goes, no. And I thought, well, then why keep all these dreams if you're not doing anything with it? He was fascinated by them. And I know that he had education, but I was just stuck. So we've got 5,000 dreams. How do you categorize them? What do you look at? Do you put them in monthly? Do you put them in yearly? You know, there's like you mentioned earlier in our broadcast about some of these dreams, like if you just go a certain time frame, that there's a pattern or something. But how do you categorize 5,000 pages of dreams? Because I know for me, I have my notebook and I'm like, I don't even know how to categorize it, so that if I had to go back and reference it, I'm grateful I've got it wrote down. But from there, I don't know. What suggestions would you have?
Okay, a few things. One, kind of justifying the guy who wrote Never Looked Back, there is a large psychological benefit shown in the research by simply writing them down. It kind of gets it out, just like painting or sketching, kind of an artistic process for some people, just getting it out of them and maybe looking at it just that day. So I do think it's okay to do that. And my teacher, Jeremy Taylor, he hand wrote all of his probably for 30 years, and he would number each one, keep it in journals, and then he would give it a title so that when he was going back through, he could find them easily through the titles. And you can also use little sticky, we call the sticky bookmark things that stick yes. out for the ones that are important. I do it very differently. I type all of mine. Even if I voice record them or handwrite them, or if I'm traveling, I might handwrite. I religiously type them out, because the style of dream work I'm doing is longitudinal. Every year I'm doing a year review, and using Control F, like Control Search and Find in my PDF or whatever document, is very useful. So when I'm teaching dream symbolism training to people, which is on the meetup, every week I go through my dreams and I type up, praying mantis was one of the ones recently. And sure enough, in the last 10 years, I've had 4 dreams of praying mantises. I can just search and find. Search and find is so nice. I highly recommend people type their dreams. But there is a greater psychological benefit that I've heard from several long-term dream workers from handwriting it than there is from typing it the first time. Because when we type, we don't necessarily feel it fully because our hands are busy doing other things.
Oh.
Whereas handwriting is such a slow process, it helps us feel into it more.
Okay, that makes sense. All right, so that's actually some good advice. I didn't think about doing that because I do type everything up because I talk mm-hmm. it in because there's so many details. How important is it to really create the details? Like, I know that I could talk about the color, the size, I'm aware, was I an observer? Was I a participant? Was it in color, black and white? And it's like, how important are all these details?
I've always experienced dreams as holographic, where like a core image, like a one paragraph summary, kind of contains the same information as the 5-page epic. I would encourage authors to write the full dreams out, like people who are kind of literary oriented and trying to write books, because the more yes. you write, the kind of more it can open the creative process. I personally try to keep it as short as possible. I try to write maybe 1 paragraph, 2 paragraphs per dream, unless it's an amazing story.
Right.
So I don't find any benefit of long dreams versus short one. And in dream groups, I frankly find it so much nicer when people share short dreams.
Yes. I agree. Yeah, I've been to a couple of dream things, and it's like there's like novels and novels and novels. And, you know, you could just see everybody rolling their eyes, and it yeah. meant something to the person dreaming it. But to the rest of us, mm-hmm. we didn't need to know all the details. We were looking for some of the key elements.
Yeah, it's no sin to keep it short. Do write the colors. Colors can be really important. Love color in dreams because that is the best access point I can find when I'm working one-on-one with people. I will focus on the colors and the animals usually first because there's so much vividness, and they can point to the chakras and help me kind of tune into what's open in the space.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Yep, it's like a portal. Every color in a dream is like a portal.
I never tied all of these things together. I mean, mind blown here. Hello. Okay, so got some questions I think that a lot of people are kind of questioning about. So let's just do some thoughts on this. What about being chased or attacked? What do those mean normally?
Okay, those are very common dreams. So don't think you're alone, first of all. So when I have a chasing dream, there's two things I want to say. One is it means like something's following us. Are we ignoring something? Are we running from something that we need to face? And the instruction usually is to do an active imagination, unless you can do it on your own, unless you have PTSD, then you want to do it with a therapist. But like
right.
to re-enter the dream and feel the ending, again, slow it down right at that point where we want to just like wake up, feel where it is in our body, like feel the monster or the dragon or a person shooting a gun with us or certain political figures. These are usually what's chasing people in my experience. We turn around, we face them, and then we create a different ending. Like instead of waking up, we feel through it, allowing whatever it is to move, not necessarily punching them out. Like we don't want to be violent in the re-scripting unless there's a reason to be, but usually the re-scripting is a feeling process, facing whatever it is and like, this is my smoking habit, or, oh, this is my loneliness chasing me. Like a lot of older men and women like are really lonely and don't even know it. And they can have these dreams of being chased.
Huh. Okay. All right. So the next question is, but before we actually do that, I'm going to give the number for the contest. If you were the first caller at 1-800-930-2819, you will win a 30-minute dream interpretation with Benjamin. So good luck. Again, the number is 1-800-930-2819. So for the rest of us, what does it mean when you are walking around naked in front of anybody or you're exposed in some way? Is there a typical generalization meaning of this?
For those of you who've read Brené Brown's work on vulnerability, I would see this as an invitation to be more vulnerable. I would see this as, it could be interpreted psychologically, but I want to point to the spiritual meaning of this, which is, can we learn to bear ourselves? Like all the layers we've added on that aren't essential. Can we learn to be vulnerable, just like we were as children? To step out of the cultural assumptions and all of the pretense we have as human beings to actually be authentic and vulnerable with each other.
Huh. Okay.
Including naked on a stage, which is, can we learn to actually be ourselves in front of a whole crowd and being motivational and inspirational being ourselves?
Okay. That makes sense. So what about dreams about falling? I know I have seen people fall. I have personally not fallen, but I know it's that body jerk. You fall out of bed or you feel like you're falling and then you have that body jerk. Is there some relevance between that?
Okay. So the body jerk, if you ever want to Google it, look up hypnic jerk, H-Y-P-N-I-C, and you can find it in the technical literature. They say in Out of the Body Experience books that's the soul returning.
No, seriously?
Because there's a downward motion for a lot of people when the soul kind of comes back from out of the body state. We're active as souls when we're asleep.
No.
That's the first thing I want to say. yeah. And the second thing I want to say is there's a downward momentum, right? Like there's an invitation toward grounding. There's an invitation toward, like if I were to actually feel into any specific dream about grounding, I might tune into my body at the moment of hitting. Because sometimes there's a coming back to earth quality where some of us are just kind of like lost in our beliefs and our thoughts, and we're actually not grounded in reality. Well, there's a bunch of interpretations of falling, but I would see most of them as positive symbols.
That's, oh my gosh. Okay. So my brain is just going a mile a minute. Just all of this information is amazing. So what about dreams about your teeth falling out? I know some people have mentioned like things are falling from them. Is there a relevance or is there a general symbolic meaning about that?
I knew you were going to ask that.
Personally, I've not lost any of my teeth, but I would be freaked out if I did. I'd be like, so right, what does the teeth right? mean?
I haven't had these dreams. I don't have a personal experience with them. But what I hear from a lot of people is there's a shame piece, a social shame, because this is our smile. This is how we meet the world. And for teeth to fall out or crumble, it's kind of like the loss of the smile, the loss of the way in which we're able to meet the world. And will people still like me? If I am this way, will people still like me? And white, they're white colored, of course, which is the symbolism of kind of completion and love and light. So the crumbling and decaying, it's definitely not what people want.
No, definitely not. Yeah. Okay, so one of my favorite things, I actually went through a window of time. I could not wait to go back to sleep. I learned I could fly in my dreams. So I actually, and actually breathing underwater. So tell us about those experiences. What do those typically mean?
Okay, so this is where we might be getting into the mix of literal and metaphorical. So I would see these dreams as a mixed state, first of all, where this could actually be a literal experience in the dream plane, the astral plane, where our out-of-the-body soul is actually experiencing kind of liquid around us or experiencing flying. Because often, I know when I become lucid, the first thing I'll do is I'll start hovering or flying. And all throughout the channeled literature, especially the spiritist books, like Chico Xavier and Divaldo Franco Pereira, they will talk about the soul capacity to fly in the astral state and like the astral cities and the different places we can experience. So that's kind of the literal layer. There's very likely an out of the body state that these are pointing to. And Claire Johnson, for example, who is more of a materialist, she'll say that in her out of the body experiences, there's this mental command where it's like the intention to dissolve all the thought forms. So there can be these mixed states that are part dream and part objective consensus reality. We can have the intent to dissolve the dream and be left with these fractalized landscapes that are just beautiful and extensive. And it's said that these are representative of the astral plane, like the state we go into after death or during dreams. Symbolically, breathing underwater, a lot of people, the stereotypical interpretation of water is emotion and sometimes spirit. So learning to breathe underwater, we'd probably start looking at the ability to be in emotion without getting overwhelmed.
Oh.
Whereas flying is traditionally seen as the taking off of the soul.
You know, I swear when I was doing it, it's like I always went to the end of a jetty and I had the certain motion I would do and I would start flying and I could not wait to go to sleep. And I swear it was like I swear my angels are going, all right, that's enough of that. You're done. You're cut off. Your wings are clipped right now. Go back to Earth. So I was having way too much fun. Okay, so we're getting a little short on time here. So I want to ask a couple more questions. Can you dream for other people? I actually heard this in one of the seminars where somebody's having a significant problem and they can't seem to find the answer. Can you dream for other people?
Some people have that spiritual gift. And even people who don't can do it through dream incubation. In Tibetan dream yoga practice, they call it clear light dreams, where people meditate to the point where they can enter the void and kind of step out of the ego. And in that state, holding the intention to focus or dream for someone else can bring in a vision for someone else. So there are actual spiritual teachings available on very high levels in this area. I personally haven't had much luck practicing it. I don't seem to have that spiritual gift personally.
Okay. Now you had mentioned a couple of questions ago, and I apologize. I'm like rapid fire. It's like, we need to do part two of this. But what about lucid dreaming? What is lucid dreaming versus regular dreaming?
Okay. And the easiest way to answer that is to look at wakefulness, right? Like we're often in our experience, like all throughout this, we've been assuming we're awake, right? We don't actually know. So lucid waking and lucid dreaming are very similar to where we're like, oh, okay, what is this state? There's a meta-awareness that comes online. So in the dream, it's like we're in the middle of the dream narrative and all of a sudden it's like, oh, I know I'm awake now and I can fly and I can test it. So there's a meta-awareness.
Okay, Well, that makes sense then. What about natural disasters? Like, I have had tornado dreams. You've had hurricane dreams. Is there some symbology or something that is tied to some type of a natural disaster?
Yes.
That sounds like a loaded statement.
I'm thinking how to answer, because it's, I find looking at my dreams and some of the people I know, people seem to have spiritual gifts for very specific things. Like, I will dream about hurricanes. I will have dreams about watching the Weather Channel and there'll be a hurricane on the map. And then I'll wake up and be like, oh, I bet a hurricane is about to form. I've had like 5 or 6 of these dreams and I don't seem to have lots of other, right? And so you get to know yourself. If you track your dream journal, you'll notice that you'll have certain gifts already. People, there seems to be, right before huge events, like let's say a magnitude 9 earthquake or something, people in the area who will be most affected seem to have dreams about it. So if you are talking to your mother and your father or tracking dream communities, you might find that 5 or 6 people suddenly share a dream about an earthquake. That would be how I would do it, is crowdsourcing and noticing it happening statistically more. But so many of us are in major transitions all the time.
Okay.
Like in the current situations, that I think a lot of us are just continually dreaming tornadoes and earthquakes. And so, whereas maybe 50 years ago when things are calmer, we would notice the blip. I think a lot of us right now are unable to notice the blips in our dreams that may be precognitive because there's just so much coming through at once.
Exactly. Oh my gosh. Okay. So we've got time for like 1 or 2 more questions. What does it mean when you're constantly late for something in your dream?
Okay. I would immediately flip that back to my life. What is it? What am I late for in my life? Am I late for the banquet? Am I late for... Now, I'd probably interpret it spiritually if it's... a lot of us in our lives know from early childhood we have a mission. We have some people want to create a homeless shelter. Some people want to teach dream work. Some people want to be an artist. And I think these dreams about being late can point to that mission.
Okay, that makes sense. All right, so the very last question that we're going to ask, and again, if people want to get involved to talk more with you, you know, again, reach out to Benjamin, and he's just chock full of information. Can you ask a question before you go to bed and get the answer in your dream?
Yeah, that's a great last question. So yes, and there's 2 tricks to having it actually work. One is to get out of your head and before bed for at least 5 minutes, do whatever you can to put a massive amount of energy into that question. So you write, not just a yes or no question. Don't do yes or no. Your right brain is not a yes or no thing. Like an open question, you write it down simply so that the dream can provide a clear answer. And then before bed, jump and dance and sing for 5 minutes. Like you could just yell out that question for 5 minutes straight, repeating it over and over while dancing. That type of energy will get a response. Whereas simply writing a question and sticking it on your bed and then watching TV, under your pillow and watching TV, that doesn't have enough energy. So the dream world responds to emotion. So that's why so many of our dreams refer to the previous day or 2 weeks ago. We have a car accident, we have a dream. It's reflecting on that emotionality that's not through. So if you add emotion to your question, you'll get a more vivid response.
Okay. Wow. I still have like so many more questions. We might need to bring you back for part 2. So I just cannot thank you enough, Benjamin Whitehurst, for coming and answering a lot of these questions. I know by far we're going to have people that are going to be reaching out to say, what does this mean? What does that mean? So now that they have a person to talk to, you the man. So anyway, one more time, if you could give them your website before we sign off today, what is that? How can they reach you?
Okay. They can reach me 3 ways. 1, you can email me. So ready@navigatechange.org is the best email for me. That's for my coaching website. My dream work website is dreamcircling.com, dreamcircling.com. And all of my trainings and coaching is on that website. And there's also a lot on the Alchemical Dreamers Guild meetup, which is, you have to set your local, your location to Durham if you actually want to find it. Because meetup censors you if you're from elsewhere. It won't show you far away ones. But that's how you can reach me. And if your community is interested in getting dream work going, I love spreading the joy of dreams. If you have a, you want me to do a talk or any of that, I love this work.
Perfect. Well, again, thank you so much for joining us. And thank you, everybody, for joining me today. My name is Lisa Ann. You can reach me at angelmessages2u.com. That's angelmessages, the number two, the letter u.com. And you've been listening to Message Delivery. You can't make this stuff up. We'll see you soon.
You have been listening to Message Delivery by Lisa Ann. You can't make this stuff up. Tune in every first and third Thursday at 1 p.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com. For more information or your own personal message delivery, visit AngelMessages2U.com. That's Angel Messages, the number two, the letter U.com. The views expressed on this program are those of the host, guests, and callers, and do not necessarily reflect the views of the station, its management, or advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.